And if you'd like, you can open your Bibles to the 16th chapter of the Gospel of Luke, and beginning with verse 1. Luke chapter 16 and beginning with verse 1. We'll be studying primarily from that text in just a few minutes. I have one announcement. I failed to get the message to JP, and that is that Jessica has requested prayer for a friend of hers, Lincoln Ramirez. And apparently he's going through some tough times, and I know that she would appreciate and he would appreciate our prayers on behalf. So add Lincoln Ramirez to your prayer list. And also, I want to thank you for being here. We're very blessed with, a house full of visitors. And as JP said a minute ago, we are very, very honored to have you today as our guest. I think we would all agree that we indeed live in very affluent times. In fact, I think it is probably safe to say that the average working man today has more money and more time to use in leisure than any other time in the history of the world. And with that prosperity, I must readily admit I am thankful. Most of the time, I'm grateful for the gadgets that we have. Sometimes you can ask Rick, I would like to break the computer screen because when it breaks down, you can live with them, or you can't live with them, and you can't live without them, someone said a while back. I think Jamie said it yesterday. And I'm thankful for these affluent times, but with these affluent times also comes a real danger, and especially not only for the world generally, but more importantly for the people of God. There's an interesting statement made in the book of Deuteronomy, the 32nd chapter, about the children of Israel. God was preparing Israel to go in and possess the land of promise, and this was his warning. But Jezreel grew fat and kicked. You grew fat, you grew thick, you were obese. And then he forsook God who made him and scornfully esteemed the rock of his salvation. The word Jezreel, the name basically means my darling beloved. And the reference here was to the nation of Israel. And you know, you heard about the mule that begins to feel his oats. And when he does, he begins to kick. God compares Israel by saying that when you grew fat and you grew thick and you were obese, you kicked. And what you did is that you scornfully esteemed the rock of his salvation. I think we would agree that the warning given to Israel is also a warning that I think is very applicable to our times. Today we're going to be studying a parable that is found in the book of Luke, the 16th chapter, commonly referred to as the parable of the steward. A steward, actually the parable of the unjust steward. A steward is someone who is obviously entrusted with the goods of another. And to some degree, God's people are stewards. We have been entrusted with the blessings of God and with many things, and God expects us to be faithful in our stewardship. Let's read Luke 16, beginning with verse 1. It says, "Then he also said to his disciples, there was a certain rich man who had a steward, and an accusation was brought to him that this man was wasting his goods. And so he called him and said to him, 'What is this I hear about you? Give an account of your stewardship, for you can no longer be steward.' Then the steward said within himself, 'What shall I do? For my master is taking the stewardship away from me. I cannot dig. I am ashamed to beg. I have resolved what to do, that when I am put out of the stewardship, they may receive me into their houses.' So he called every one of his master's debtors to him and said to the first, 'How much do you owe my master?' And he said, 100 measures of oil. And so he said to him, 'Take your bill and sit down quickly and write 50. And then he said to another, "And how much do you owe?" And he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said to him, 'Take your bill and write 80. And so the master commended the unjust steward because he had dealt shrewdly. For the sons of this world are more shrewd in their generation than the sons of light. And I say to you, make friends for yourself by unrighteous mammon, that when you fail, they may receive you into an everlasting home. He who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much. And he who is unjust in what is least is unjust in much. Therefore, if you had not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? And if you have been faithful in what is another man's, he will give you what is your own. No servant can serve two masters, for he will either hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. First of all, the storyline of this parable begins, number one, with a charge that was brought against the steward. There was a man who had many goods, and so he hired this steward to take charge of his possessions. But apparently the charge was that this man had wasted his master's possessions, and so because of that he was confronted, and thus he comes up with a solution. The master was benevolent enough to give him time to get things in order, and in that process of time, the solution to his dilemma is revealed in verses 3 through 7. Basically, what he does is he takes his master's debtors and he says, well, how much do you owe? Well, 100 measures of oil. What I'm going to do is reduce the debt by 50%. Sit down and write 50, stamp it paid. And then again in verse 7, and he said to another, how much do you owe? And he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said, take your bill and write 80. That is, reducing the debt by 20%. Now, the reason why he was doing this is clearly revealed in verses 3 and 4. Because first of all, in verse 3, he says, what am I going to do? My master is taking the stewardship away from me. First of all, I cannot dig. The idea is that hard labor is beneath my dignity. I certainly can't do that. And number two, I'm ashamed to beg. That is, I wouldn't want to do that. It would bring reproach upon me and be shameful for me to beg. And so this is what I'll do. I'll make friends with my Lord's debtors. And therefore, then when the time comes and I am kicked out, then they will receive me into their homes. I guess we might call this the idea of buttering them up so that he might have a place to stay when he's kicked out. We might refer to that in a sense as honorable sponging. That's basically what he is. Now what's interesting is that the result of that is that in verse 8, this man's master, not the Lord Jesus, but this man's master, commends the unjust steward because he had dealt shrewdly, been very shrewd and wise in his dealings. And then Jesus makes a point in verse 8. The point is, and it says, for the sons of this world are more shrewd in their generation than the sons of light. Now here's kind of a dilemma that we have with all this. One of the questions often raised, and rightly so, is would Jesus really use an unjust steward to make a point? And yes, he did. Here was a man who had wasted his master's goods and who had dealt not only shrewdly but dishonestly with regard to what his debtors owed his master. Yet Jesus does commend him for one thing. He commends him for his shrewdness. And he begins to make a point with that that we'll look at in verses 9 through 13. Jesus says in verse 8, for the sons of this world are more shrewd in their generation than the sons of light. Now the real question is, what is the lesson that Jesus is trying to get across here? Well, consider with me several lessons that are found in verses 9 through 13. We'll come back and read these and look at them in more particular in a minute. First of all, number one, Jesus said, sons of light, you need to be wiser than the sons of this world. Number two, you need to make friends of the unrighteous mammon. Number three, you need to be faithful in the unrighteous mammon. And number four, you cannot serve God and mammon. Now, what is the point of all this? Well, first of all, let's go back to the statement that is made in verse 8. In verse 8, Jesus said, "For the sons of this world are more shrewd in their generation than the sons of light." You have a contrast here between the sons of this world. That is, those whose primary concern is the world and worldly things. In contrast to the children of light, that is, those whose primary concern are spiritual things. And Jesus simply makes an observation. He said, in getting what they want, the sons of this world are generally speaking wiser than the sons of light in getting what they desire or what they should want, that is, the blessings of God. I think the same is true today. If you make a simple observation of the world, it is true today that people of the world generally are wiser and shrewder in getting what they desire than oftentimes we are as children of God. Then he makes a rather interesting statement in verse 9. He said, "And I say to you, make friends for yourself by unrighteous mammon." What does he mean by that? The question is Jesus encouraging us to engage in unrighteousness? Obviously not. Oftentimes when we come across such strange statements in the Bible, clear, plain passages will help us in understanding. And certainly we know, any of us who have an understanding of Scripture knows, that Jesus has no affinity to unrighteousness. Thus, Jesus is not encouraging us to practice unrighteousness. But he does say that we need to make friends of the unrighteous mammon. In verse 11, I think we have in the context a comment made by Jesus that will help us to understand that. In verse 11, he says, "Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches?" I want you to notice a contrast there between unrighteous mammon and spiritual blessing, true riches. And Jesus said, the child of God is to be faithful in the unrighteous mammon, in a sense, so that he can also receive the true riches, that is, the blessings of God. Unrighteous mammon is simply used here in a figurative sense, describing things, material possessions, money. And he says, the child of God is to be faithful in the use of that unrighteous mammon so that he can receive the blessings that God has to offer him, the true blessing. We have a scale here. And he says, you need to be careful how you use material possessions so that you can also, or be faithful in stewardship in your material possessions, so that you can also receive the true blessing, the true riches, the blessings that are offered by God. I think that very simply put, is the lesson that Jesus has in mind. Because he observes that the time is coming when these things, material things, will fail. And he says, when they fail, they will declare to a righteous judge that your primary concern has not been with material things, but with a pursuit of God and a pursuit of spiritual things, that you may be received into everlasting habitations or everlasting life. Now, there are some important lessons that we learn from this. In fact, Jesus says in verse 13, in observation and in closing to his comments upon the parable, no one can serve two masters. For either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. That is, that if money becomes your God, it's no longer your friend. It becomes your enemy. You cannot serve God and mammon. Money cannot be your God, your primary concern. Material thing cannot be your primary concern. And at the same time, try to serve God. You're going to have to make a choice. What is going to be your priority in life? Is it going to be the pursuit of spiritual things or the pursuit of material things? Now, with that in mind, I want us to consider some important lessons. Let's kind of quit meddling, quit preaching and meddle a little bit. The primary lesson here is stewardship. Being a good steward of those things that we have in this world. What are the things that we enjoy? Number one, I have a body. And by and large, primarily, I have been blessed with a healthy body. I thank God every day for my health. And for the health of my family. But God has given me this material body that is a habitation of the soul for a reason. In the book of Romans, the 12th chapter, and verses 1 and 2, the Apostle Paul, in Romans chapter 12, and in verses 1 and 2, makes this observation. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Let me suggest that my goal and your goal every day that we live ought to be that today my body and my life is going to be given as a living sacrifice to God. My primary concern today is not with what men think, but rather with what God thinks. My primary concern is not with my material comfort, but rather my primary concern is with spiritual comfort and the relationship I have with God. In the book of 1 Corinthians, the 6th chapter, and verses 19 and 20, in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, and verses 19 and 20, Paul says, "Or do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have from God, and you are not your own? For you are bought with a price. Therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God." Let me say that you won't find that on a television commercial. In fact, to the contrary. Paul says your body is a temple of the Spirit. And it is not to be used for your own personal gratification. But rather, it is to be used to the glory of God. God made it for a reason. And primarily, God made it and designed it that you might use it to the glory of God. So the things that I do, the things that I say, the places that I go, the activities that I engage in with this body primarily is to be used to honor and glorify God. Another application is stewardship and time. How many times have we heard people say, "Well, I just didn't have time to do that"? Function of the local church. Time to share the gospel with a friend. Time to encourage a weak brother. "Well, I just don't have time." You know, probably what we need to do is what we do with the computer quite often. You know, you click on my computer, you go to the C drive, and you look at properties, and you find the disk is full with all of this garbage that we really don't need on the disk, taking up all that space. And there are so many things in our life, all that garbage that we really think is important, when in reality, you can't and you're not going to take it with you. You know, I enjoy this world. I enjoy life. I enjoy athletics. I enjoy occasional game of golf. I enjoy fishing. And there's nothing wrong with those things. I enjoy sometimes just sitting on the back porch. Nothing wrong with that. But when it becomes my God and our God, and it takes up so much of the disk space, so much of our time, that we don't have time for the Lord, then perhaps we need to listen to the parable of the unjust steward and the lesson that Jesus made in that parable. You know, Paul says in Ephesians chapter 5 and in verse 15. In Ephesians chapter 5 and in verse 15, Paul says, "See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil." So which means more to you today? Your spiritual well-being and the spiritual well-being of your family, or your material comfort? You answer the question for yourself between you and God. And then there is the matter of opportunity. I don't know how many times I hate to say that I've blown those opportunities, especially opportunities to share the gospel. Just, you know, busy with the day, not wanting to go to plan B, not wanting to be bothered, and therefore not taking the time to spend with this person and sharing with them the greatest news and the greatest bargain that was ever offered. You know, the greatest bargain, ladies, isn't at Walmart. The greatest bargain, young men, is not at Golfsmith or Sam's Club. It's in this book. You know, Paul says in Galatians chapter 6 and verse 10, he says, "Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially to those who are of the household of faith." I understand that primarily the good that he refers to there is soul good. In fact, in the context, back in chapter 6 and verse 1, he says, "If a man is overtaken in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, considering yourself, lest you also are tempted." Well, my brother's in sin, but I don't have time. You have an opportunity, but you're not going to seize the moment because you don't want to be bothered. A brother living in sin that may lose his soul, overtaken, but I simply don't have time, don't want to be bothered with it. Somebody else will take care of it. Or we have a friend or a neighbor who needs to hear the gospel that comes from heaven, who could truly benefit from that great blessing and that wonderful news of Jesus Christ. But I'm too busy with the garden to give time to my friend who needs to hear the gospel. Where's the priority? That's the question. That's the challenge before us. Well, what about stewardship and my talents? You know, one of the most frightening passages to me in all the Bible is a parable that is found in Matthew, the 25th chapter. The parable of the talents. Because I'm afraid that there are a lot of 5-talent, 2-talent, and 1-talent individuals running around that aren't using those talents primarily for serving the Lord. So the question is, how are you using those talents? How are you using the God-given abilities? Are you using it to encourage the local church? You know, I can recall a brother a while back who was always decrying the condition of society and the world going down and our country is, you know, digressing morally. Yes, I would agree with that. And an individual who had a lot of talent but could never really give that talent to a local church, not consistently. And I guess my question is, so what should be? when God's people assemble, of all the people on earth, you can't make it, but you're concerned about the condition of the world. So the question is, how are we using our God-given abilities? What is the primary goal in life? What is the priority here? And then there's the one we don't like to talk about. Stewardship and money. You know, I want you to do something at home. Here's your homework, guys. Look at the budget sometime, just honestly. You know, 25% for housing and so much for entertainment, and maybe 15% for medicine and doctors, and you go down the list, and then you get down to the bottom of the list, local church, 5% or less. I wonder what that says about our priorities. When it comes to providing for the spiritual things of my family and of God's family, where is our real treasure? Is it in the unrighteous mammon that is going to fail? Or is our real treasure in heavenly things and spiritual things, in the promoting of the gospel, in sharing the gospel, and sharing my money with those who are willing to preach the gospel in difficult places such as Nigeria or Jamaica or some other place? Is it primarily devoted to the local church, or is it all about me and my things? You see, how much wisdom do we really use? I wonder if Jesus looked at us today, would he make the same observation? The sons of this world are wiser in their generation than the sons of light. You know, if our real desire is to please God and to go to heaven, we'll be honest with ourselves. And we will take a long, hard, honest look at our lives and our priorities. And we'll start today, not tomorrow, but today, making the changes that need to be made. I think that's so. I think so. The problem is, I'm afraid at times we're not serious enough about God and going to heaven. That's the problem. It sort of reminds me of an illustration that a good friend of mine told me a few years ago that I've told many times before here in the last 18 years. But he was doing a lesson on the Beatitudes. It was in young people's class, little boys and girls. And he finally got down to, you know, those who are pure in heart will see God. And then he asked a question. He said, and so how many of you today, who would you like to see more than anything else in the world? And one little boy raised his hand and said, well, I'd like to see Moses. Well, that's good. Another boy said he'd like to see Abraham. And there was a little boy in the back, and he was probably more honest than the rest. And this is David, folks. You'll know how old I am. But this little boy back in the back raised his hand, and he said, I want to see more than anybody else in the world. He said, I want to see Farrah Fawcett. But that's the problem. We'd rather see Farrah Fawcett than God. That's the problem. No, God has a wonderful blessing to offer to you. He made a great sacrifice for us upon the cross by His Son Jesus. And He asked us then to give our life to Him. And the commitment is well worth it. Eternally worth it. Because of all that He offers through His Son. If you believe that today, and you believe in the power of the cross, and today it means something to you, and you know what you need to do to come to Jesus,
would you come to your stand and sing?